Welcome to the Writer's Market Podcast, which is focused on helping writers find more success with their writing. I'm your co-host, Robert Lee Brewer.
And I'm your co-host, Brian A. Clems.
Together, we're Robert and Brian, and this is our show.
The Writer's Market Podcast is hosted by writersmarket.com and the Writer's Digest Writing Community, a division of F&W, a content and e-commerce company.
Let's see what's on tap today. All right, welcome to the Writer's Market Podcast. Today we're going to talk with Jessica McCann, who is a freelance writer, and at a certain point started cutting back on her freelance writing to follow up and do a novel that is published by Bellbridge Books, All Different Kinds of Free. And this got me thinking, Brian, about writing the novel, and you know, that's kind of a dream for a lot of writers, and a lot of even nonfiction freelance writers have started off freelancing, making money that way, and then while working on a novel or some other pet project that is really near and dear to their heart, as almost like, you know, this is what I really want to do with my writing beyond freelancing. And I was wondering, Brian, do you work on a novel, or do you have like dreams of doing that someday?
Yes, I really do. It's tough to transition out of freelance work into that fiction writing realm. You know, I've been doing freelance work for a number of years, whether that's, you know, getting pieces published in magazines to editing manuscripts and those kinds of stuff. And it's much easier to do those things because it helps, you know, I have three young daughters. I know you have lots of kids, you know, with school sports, all that kind of stuff, you know, trying to make sure that you continue to pay your mortgage. You want to do all those kinds of things and make sure that you are financially stable. At the same time, when I got into writing, the idea for me wasn't just to write for, you know, other magazines or taking care of other people's work. It really was a dream to write a novel myself. And I did get the chance to, of course, write the book, Oh Boy, You're Having a Girl, A Dad's Survival Guide to Raising Daughters. And my creative nonfiction work is a gift book, is a funny book. And I love that. It's one of my proudest achievements. But on the side, I've also, you know, still always yearned to write a novel with that new challenge. And so I have been slowly putting more time aside, and I'm currently working on a YA novel. It's very slow in the early process, and I admire anybody who writes novels with the endless possibilities. But forcing yourself to turn down assignments or turn down things that can financially benefit your family in the present to pause and focus on a dream and a goal of yours that may never pay off, although could potentially pay off huge. It is tough to find that balance. I'm not even sure how to do it yet. I don't know if you found a way to balance that kind of thing out.
Yeah, I don't know. I've of course published my book of poems, and poetry has always been like kind of a cool happy medium for me because you know, I've always been able to write poems just kind of on the fly, and if I just have like an idea or an image, I can write it down on a post-it note and kind of move on with my work. But my first love was poetry. Then I went to college and kind of got burnt out on it and started writing fiction, and actually like won some awards in college and I've got paid a lot more money for the fiction that I wrote when I was in college than I still have for my poetry, which, you know, speaks a lot to how much you get paid for poetry, I guess.
Yeah, but, I was poor poets, man.
It's funny because like I really do enjoy writing fiction, but you really have to immerse yourself in it. And I've really had trouble doing that while working. But it's funny because it always comes up as a topic with all of my kids. Even last night, my 7-year-old for the first time said, "Hey, Daddy, you should write a real book." and you know, I've got two bookshelves full of writer's markets and poet's markets that I've edited. I've got my book of poetry collections, but to my kids, a real book is writing a novel. And so I mean, you know, that dream like is there, and it's constantly being pushed on me by my kids.
Oh, man. I don't know why. I'm finding this really funny only because it sounds like something my kids would say. Hey, Dad, why don't you publish a real book, you know, and stop being so ugly, you know?
That's, that's funny. Well, you know, kids are brutally honest.
Yeah.
So anyways, like, I am excited to talk to Jessica McCann and find out about her freelance work and, you know, how she made all that work. But then also finding out the story about how she crossed that bridge and wrote her first novel. So we're going to talk to Jessica McCann in just a moment. But first, three things. Welcome to Three Things, the part of the Writer's Market podcast that takes a look at three specific things writers need to do to find more success with their writing. This time around, let's look at the three things writers can do to get more out of social media. The first thing is to follow others. Follow writers you admire, sure, but also follow publications and publishers that you'd like to publish your writing. Often on social media, you'll see calls for submissions, both general calls and those that are specific to social media. The second thing writers can do on social media is interact. After all, this is social media, right? Recent research has shown that people feel more engaged when there is interaction on social media, and that means going above and beyond the like button on Facebook and retweet button on Twitter. The third thing is to connect. Of course, you should connect with people and publications on social media, but I'm actually talking about connecting your social media presence to your website. You do have a website, don't you? You can do these three things interchangeably, but if you follow, interact, and connect on social media, you'll get more out of it than the average writer. Until next time, keep writing and marketing what you write. Okay, today we have with us Jessica McCann. Jessica is the author of All Different Kinds of Free, an award-winning historical novel published by Bellbridge Books. McCann's reporting and creative nonfiction has appeared in a variety of magazines, including Business Week, The Writer, Phoenix, Raising Arizona Kids, and ASU Research, to name a few. Plus, many corporations, universities, and nonprofit organizations tap her to write and edit dynamic communication materials. She lives in the Metro Phoenix area with her husband, two children, and two dogs. Learn more at jessicamccann.com. Welcome to the show, Jessica.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Okay, so I guess let's begin by diving into your origin story. How did you get started writing and into publishing and everything?
Well, you know, I actually, it's kind of a funny story. I kind of just stumbled into it in high school, my senior year. I was, I'd always enjoyed reading, and I never really thought of writing specifically. And all through high school, I was a dancer. And so my senior year, dance class was no longer an option in high school, so I needed another easy elective to keep my GPA up. And I thought, oh, okay, writing class would be cool. I'll join the school newspaper. That should be pretty easy. And so I joined, and as it turned out, I really enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I would. And then there was a Young Reporters press conference that one of the local hospitals would sponsor every year. This was back in the day when healthcare companies had much larger communication, marketing, community outreach type budgets. So I went to this Young Reporters press conference, and it was kind of cool. And they had, there was a little insert in the media kit saying, we've got volunteer opportunities if you want to write for our newsletter. So I thought, oh, that'd be kind of fun. So I applied, and I wrote an article for their newsletter, and they were excited. They thought I did a good job, and they said, what would it take to have you come in and write more articles? And I said, well, you could pay me. I was already in my senior year of high school. I was already working, you know, about 25 to 30 hours a week at a job and doing school. So I wasn't really interested in doing a whole lot of volunteer work. So they said, okay, we'll pay you. So I ended up doing that. And so that was my first freelance gig, my senior year of high school. And it just kind of blossomed from there. You know, met lots of people. They kind of all took me under their wing and taught me the ropes of, you know, all the different types of writing, from press releases and newsletter articles to, you know, all sorts of annual reports and whatnot. So it was really an amazing experience for me at such a young age to really get that broad look at what was out there. And I just kind of kept going from there. I had a few quote unquote real jobs in marketing and communications, but found that really I enjoyed the freedom of freelancing, the flexibility, and the chance to, you know, just write about all sorts of different kinds of things, not just one type of article or one type of industry. So started, you know, stretching my wings and reaching out to different businesses, and just kept rolling.
And with that, when you dove in, you said that you found the whole experience of different freelance types of gigs with press releases, you know, online articles, web articles, that kind of stuff. Was that a real challenge since your background was within dance and you, you know, worked on the paper some? That was kind of different from what you were doing before, right?
Oh, yes. Much different. And for the record, I'm going to date myself, but there was really no online web writing in those days. This is going back a couple of decades here, but but yeah, I mean, you know, obviously it was far different from anything I had written before, because pretty much everything I had written in school was either, you know, a research paper, which when you're in school, and especially in, you know, lower grades, it's very elementary and very straightforward, and, you know, essays and short stories or poems. I mean, you know, all the stuff that you do in your English classes throughout your grade school and elementary school and high school. So this was just all completely new to me, and I loved it. You know, it was really just the concept of, especially understanding like the press release, for example, just getting that behind the scenes look that, so you're writing a press release, and the ideal situation is that what you're going to write, the journalists are going to love it so much, they're going to lift it and they're just going to print it verbatim. So you kind of have control over what the newspapers are going to write. And I was like, whoa, I didn't know that's how that worked. So, you know, it was kind of an eye-opening experience for me. And, you know, it was almost like I didn't go to college. So this was like my college education. I mean, it was just, you know, right into the mix there, and just learning from the media people, learning from the community relations people, from the fundraising people. It was just all completely new.
Yeah, awesome. I remember doing a couple of freelance assignments early on in my writing career as well. I'm not going to date myself, but it was around that time as well. And I learned a lot. I mean, I learned in high school, you learn those short stories, you follow that five paragraph structure, what we were taught sophomore year, and it doesn't apply exactly to the different types of things that you're writing. So I found that very, very interesting. I don't know about you, Robert, if you have any experience in that arena.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, we do all kinds of different types of writing. But what I found really interesting, you mentioned that you didn't go to college at all.
No.
So that's really cool, because I think a lot of writers who, like, they kind of have this thought that, you know, they have to go to college to take up a writing job. And, you know, that doesn't, you know, but I guess the main thing is, like, you know, when you get started writing, it's really about building up clips. When people pitch me, I can't think of a time when I worry about what college they went to. So
that's exactly. Exactly. Well, and it's interesting because I, you know, people are always surprised when I say that, and it's kind of funny because I've done some, you know, some workshops and presentations, like for Arizona State University. They've got a writing conference that they do every year, and I've done that a few times, and it's always just a little bit awkward for me, because you know, I'll be on a panel with, other, authors who've, you know, gotten their MFAs, and then you've got the folks in the audience who are like, do I need an MFA in order to write a novel? And, you know, my first thought is, no, not really. I never even went to college. So, you know, what you need to do is you need to learn how to write. And to me, the best way to do that is to read a lot, you know, and you have to be open to feedback and those kinds of things. And I think that's some of that, you know, sort of real life stuff that I learned through freelancing and, you know, the taking constructive feedback on your writing and knowing that everybody has different opinions on things. And, you know, those are the kinds of things. I don't know if they teach that in college or not, obviously, because I never went. But, you know, you write something and it may be perfect and beautiful and just flawless. And the client says, nah, that's not really what we were thinking. Okay, what were you thinking? We'll start over again, you know, and you can't go, but no, it doesn't matter because this is beautiful and flawless. You know, so that developed a lot of thick skin for me. And that helped when I started flexing my muscles with fiction writing because it's all pretty scary. And if you learn not to take it personally, then that helps a lot. But it's, you know, you just, to me, we all have a different path that we take, no matter what our career, no matter what our, you know, passions are. And for some people, the, you know, the college route and the MFA and all of that is invaluable and it takes them where they want to go. I just took a little bit more of a meandering path, I guess, and still got me where I eventually wanted, and I didn't even know where I wanted to go. So,
well, I think that's something that's really interesting about the writing community in general is that everybody's backgrounds tend to be very different, and they range from having, you know, a crazy amount of high level education to moderate to, you know, breaking out by experience early on. And I think that's very cool that you can speak to a segment of the audience who maybe didn't have the money or the time to devote to something like that, but really want to feel like they want to dive into a freelancing career or writing a manuscript or doing something like that. So I think that's great, and you're a great success story on this front. Now, during that process, when you started doing the newsletters and everything, did you finally hit a tipping point? Because it was a real learning curve for you. Did you finally hit a tipping point at some time where you said, you know, I think I've got this. I've got this down. I know what the companies want or the people who are paying me for the assignments want? Or is that just still an ever-learning curve?
Well, you do sort of hit a tipping point, and actually I would almost describe it as more of a rut because you do kind of get into that groove and you're like, okay, yeah. I can kind of do this with my eyes closed now. And you know, obviously every client is different and every person is different. And so they're going to have, you know, certain needs. And when you take on a new client, you've got that learning curve to figure out what it is they want. But when it comes to writing certain things, especially like newsletter articles or blog posts and stuff, I mean, there is somewhat of a formula that you follow, and you know what needs to be in there and you know what doesn't need to be in there. And so you just kind of go through the motions sometimes. And interestingly enough, that's how I ended up dabbling with fiction, because I was at a point in my freelancing where I had a handful of clients that I had for, you know, a decade or more, and I was doing the same things for them every year, the same annual report, the same quarterly newsletter, and I felt like my writing was very stale and boring. My clients still seem to be happy with me, but I was forever worried that they were going to call me one day and go, Jessica, you know, we're just not sure about this anymore. We're getting tired, you know. So I started doing writing prompts and things like that with fictional things just to kind of get my creative juices flowing again and just to kind of help break out of the rut that I felt like I was in. And started writing a few short stories, and suddenly it kind of occurred to me, this is fun. I could do this like full time if I could figure out how to get paid for it. So, you know, it sort of was a slow evolution in that direction, but, you do as a freelancer, but I found that I'm still freelancing, obviously not as much since I've had some success with publishing, but the fiction writing re-energized my corporate nonfiction writing, and it enabled me to kind of approach it with a little bit different effect in a different way and kind of juice it up. And I realized, you know, I can apply some of these things that I would do in my fiction writing to my nonfiction writing, and that's okay, you know, and vice versa, really. So it kind of strengthened that for me and got me out of my rut with my freelance, and also allowed me to, you know, kind of explore different roads when I had time.
Yeah, that's great. That's a lot of times I think the poetry that I do, that's just part of what I'm doing, is just kind of breaking out of the rut, doing stuff a little bit differently. And I loved what I read on your website, this quote, I swore that I would never let freelancing become my own version of the 9-to-5 grind, nor let the business of writing dampen my joy of writing. So I thought that was a really profound quote, and kind of, you know, kind of a cool idea to think, yeah, I'm freelancing, but does that become like a new type of prison in a way? Because, you know, a lot of people think of like the 9-to-5 job, I'm going to be a freelancer and then I'm going to have all this freedom, but then you've kind of still got that one trap there. So
you do. And the thing that I think a lot of people either don't think about when they start freelancing, or at least if they are dreaming about freelancing, is that not only are you working, you know, as a professional writer, which is very cool to be able to earn a living doing something you love, but you're also running a business. And it does get, you know, I'm a word girl. I am not a numbers girl. You know, so just the stuff that goes along with running a business, like keeping track of expenses and billing clients and following up and making sure that your clients are actually paying you, and making sure that you're not taking on more work than you can manage, so that you're, you know, there's that sort of feast or famine thing that a lot of independent people fall into with their work, is that you have sort of a lull where suddenly you go, oh, how am I going to pay the mortgage next month if I don't land a couple of big projects like right now? And then you get four calls, so you take all four projects, and suddenly you're working 24 hours a day. And, you know, so you've got to kind of plan ahead and really think big picture, long term, and space out your projects and know when to say no. And, you know, that's all the yucky stuff of being a small business owner, basically. And so, you know, it's not easy. And that's why a lot of people, they'll start freelancing and then they realize that it's not really what they thought it was going to be, and they'll stop. And I've even had situations where I've referred clients out to other freelancers when they've called and said, hey, we've got a project. And I say, you know, I really can't take that on right now, but I know somebody who'll take good care of you. And other freelancers are always just shocked when I do that. And it's, if they like the other freelancer better, the client is welcome to stay with them. But if they respect me and my work, they often just come back they may hire somebody else temporarily, or even they'll say, well, you know what, just go, maybe this deadline isn't as pressing as we thought. We can wait a month. You know, so I mean, having all of those things, that's the real, you know, that's the grind. That's the day job. Freelancing is the day job. So, you know, that's kind of what I've learned over the years is doing it.
That's amazing that these companies find you that valuable, or these clients find you that valuable that they come back to you. You're doing an amazing job. Early on, when you were just breaking in, and even now, how do you find clients? I mean, now I'm sure you've had enough experience where a lot of them come to you, and it sounds like they're coming back to you to the point where you have to refer them out. But early on in those days, did you cold query? Did you search any, you know, sites? Did you search any newspapers? How did you find work?
Yeah, sure. I did a little of everything. In the early years, I was very interested, exciting about, you know, the byline. Obviously, as a new writer, it's fun to see your name in print. And so I did do a lot of magazine querying. And typically what I would do is, you know, I had my Writer's Market, a little plug there.
Thank you.
You know, that was an invaluable tool. And I would, you know, just kind of come up with various ideas and things and pitch. And so I got some assignments that way. And then because I did start in the hospital at St. Joseph's Hospital locally, a lot of those folks, you know, it's a fairly transitory industry, even then, you know, people might work at one hospital for 5 years and then move on to a different place. And so I kept in touch with all those people, and this was prior to LinkedIn, you know, so it makes it a little tougher to keep track of people you've worked with, but you keep those connections. And when they go to different places, you follow up with them and say, hey, you know, do you need anybody new? So I was able to kind of keep that going, working for people that I had already worked for. And I did, you know, I freelanced part-time and I worked part-time. So that helped as well until I finally went full-time freelance. I'm trying to think, there's a few other things that, you know, just one thing that I would do every year is send out a Thanksgiving card to anybody I had ever done work for, anybody I had ever worked with, just as a kind of way to say, hey, you know, I'm thankful for my connection with you and I'm thinking of you this time of year. And that actually would, it would be amazing because people would be coming up on their holiday vacations and suddenly they'd go, ooh, how am I going to get my newsletter out next month when I'm on vacation for 2 weeks? And then they'd call Jessica. You know, so I mean, it's just those kind of things you want to keep, you want to stay in their mind. I would send out a card in the spring just to kind of say hello and hope you're looking forward to a nice summer kind of a thing. And I'd always send something very unique and colorful so that they would keep it on their bulletin board or on their desk or whatever. And then they'd be like, oh yeah, Jessica sent me that card. Maybe she can fill in for me while I'm on vacation. You know, so it's those kinds of things. I also trolled the want ads. You know, when you see a company that needs a communications director, that means they're going to need somebody to do the work until they hire a communications director. And so I would follow up and say, you know, I see that you've shorthanded right now. I can fill the gap for you as a freelancer while you do your search, take your time and find the right person. You know, so I got a lot of work that way as well.
It's a great idea.
Thanks.
those are both great ideas. Yeah. So Thanksgiving card too. Do you have a favorite type of freelancing since you've done such a varied type of freelancing out there?
Yeah, you know, it really, I really don't. I think that the very nature of the freelancing is what I like about it, that there are so many different opportunities. You know, I've done everything from the annual reports and the newsletters, but I've written scripts for videos. I've ghost written speeches for people. You know, so it's kind of fun just sometimes to take on something new like that. A lot of times that scares freelancers. They think, oh, well, I've never written that before. I don't know if I should even, you know, take the job. And I was always kind of the thought where, hey, I've never done that before. I'm going to take that job. Let's see if I can pull it off, you know. So especially when somebody like with a PhD comes to you and says, I need help writing something. And you're like, hee hee, okay, I can do that. You know, and you don't tell them that you've got your high school diploma hanging behind you on the wall, you know. So it's just a matter of, you know, trying new things. And that's what's always kind of thrilled me about. I guess that's why I've still done it, you know, interviewing, especially I've done a lot of writing for Arizona State University. And I've interviewed rocket scientists and, you know, it's kind of fun listening to them and then stopping and saying, okay, I have no clue what you just said. You're going to need to say that again in, like, you know, human language, because I'm trying to write this for people that are going to read it that aren't going to know either. So, you know, there's almost sort of a benefit to that too, to being able to kind of bring it back down to the average person.
You mentioned that at some point you made the decision to switch from the full-time job to freelancing becoming your full-time job. I know we have a lot of listeners that either are dabbling in freelancing or have been doing it for a little while, and I'm sure many of them are thinking, when should I make that leap? I'm starting to accumulate a lot of work. When should I make that leap? And for you, what made that decision for you? Was there a financial goal when you said, I'm earning X amount per month, now I think that I can do that? Can you walk us through your mindset over that period of time?
Yeah, you know, it was kind of just a slow evolution, and part of it was financial. Part of it was, frankly, you know, personal family stuff. I was working part-time freelance and and then part-time in a job that was just, you know, answering phones kind of a thing. And I landed a job full-time as a magazine editor. And I worked there for about 4 years, and I loved it. Worked a lot of hours. There was no time for freelance during that period. And I started feeling a little stifled after a while because it was, again, the same old thing. I also worked for a person who was not at all empathetic to family issues. He had never had children. I had a toddler who, if anybody out there has children, they know kids get sick from time to time and, you know, stuff comes up. And he would, you know, he would say things like, well, why does your baby get sick all the time? Are you giving her vitamins? And, you know, this.
Robert and I are well too aware. Between us, we have, I think, like 8 kids. So
it's like, you know, it's like she's in daycare all day while I'm working for you, and kids are germy, you know. So so there was always sort of that tug of war going on. And so I knew that I needed to either get a new job with a new boss who was more empathetic, or I needed to just do my own thing. And I, you know, I quit. I didn't have another job lined up. I had nothing. except, you know, like a big mortgage and a husband who also, you know, worked full time, but not enough to support our growing family. And so I quit, and I got on the phone the next day and I started calling up all the people that I used to do work for. And, you know, I don't necessarily recommend that, you know, and I did go back out and get another job. I worked at a little jewelry store in the mall, you know, while I was building my business. So you do what you have to do. You kind of have to go with your gut, but don't be afraid to take the leap. You know, I mean, you never know what's going to happen and you never know who you're going to meet. And, you know, I never felt like it was beneath me to work retail in the mall while I built my business, you know. So there's those kinds of things where I think a lot of times people feel like, oh, well, if I quit my, you know, semi-prestigious desk job or corporate job and I take a job flipping burgers, what are people going to think of me? And will that make it harder if I need to go back into the corporate world? Will they look at that and go, you know? But you can't think in those terms. You know, you just have to feel, you have to go with your gut and do what you feel like is right for you and not worry about the naysayers or worry about what other people might perceive your decisions. And as things progressed, you know, I would set monthly goals. Okay, you know, for my first year, I want to make X amount a month. And I'd sit down in December and write out goals for the next year. Okay, now I want to bump it up to X number. So you do have to plan strategically and think that way and set goals for yourself, just as, you know, your employer might if you were working for somebody. So it just kind of evolved that way. And eventually I got to the point where I was taking on too much work and I had to start delegating stuff out. You know, I hired a transcriber, a person that could transcribe my interviews for me and, you know, things that so that I could focus more on the writing rather than transcribing tapes, you know, 8 hours a day after I've done all the interviews. So it comes to that point where you're like suddenly juggling, oh my gosh, you know, I've got a business here. How do I do this? So
and that's great that, you know, it basically all starts, though, with, you know, I've got to go do this. And this is, you know, I'm just going to go for it. And thinking about doing it, you know, can turn into a few months to a few years to, you know, boy, I never did that. So that's great. And I imagine there was probably kind of some of those different ingredients in play when you decided to start with your novel writing, with all different kinds of free. I know that you've kind of cut back a little bit on your freelancing as a result. Could you kind of walk us through that decision-making process?
Sure. I actually wasn't quite as brave with that element of it. I found, like I said, I had kind of just started dabbling in it more so to boost my creativity for my freelance work, because I felt like I was just, you know, just stifled. And as I started having some more fun with it, I would just, you know, kind of dabble here and there and write little short stories and whatnot. And as I started, I had had this project for a while that I had actually wanted to write the book as a biography. My novel, All Different Kinds of Free, was inspired by actual events. And I had actually been working on a freelance project editing a book manuscript for MIT about all the Supreme Court justices in history. And it was a very dry, boring manuscript. And it was very, very tall, sitting on my kitchen table. But I was reading through it. And for whatever reason, this one court case really popped out, Prigg versus Pennsylvania. It was maybe a page or two in this, you know, 700-page manuscript. And it talked about this bounty hunter and going to trial for kidnapping this woman and her children, free black woman. And the thing that struck me was that nobody, you know, there really wasn't any reference to why this was such an important case. It was, you know, it was important because it, you know, turned the tides in the country, and it was important to this particular chief justice who made the decision, but it didn't say what happened to Margaret Morgan and her poor children who were kidnapped. Nobody really cared. And so I just started looking into that some more, and I thought, well, it'd be really cool to write a biography about her. And I did a little research here and there on the side, and over the course of a couple of years, and found that there was nothing written about her, that nobody really gave a darn what happened to Margaret and her children, or whether she was indeed free or not free at the time, you know, Civil War, prior Civil War. Nobody cared. So I thought, okay, this sucks. So I kind of put the project on the shelf, can't write my biography. And then as I started dabbling with this fiction stuff, I thought, maybe I can fictionalize her story. And so I just started working on it, and I started writing it, and it was fun, and it was interesting. And I didn't tell anybody for a very long time. Finally worked up the courage to tell my husband, did not even tell my kids. You know, and you just kind of keep it back there because you think, well, I don't even know if I can do this, you know, but I kind of felt compelled to tell her story. So I worked on it in the shadows for a while. And when I felt like it was decent enough, I started sharing it with some people in a very close circle, a writer friend of mine who gave me some feedback. And, you know, so it was a lot different in that respect that I remember when I got my agent, and my husband posted on Facebook, he's got like about, you know, 5 million friends on Facebook, and I have like 3. So he posted on Facebook that Jessica just got an agent for her novel. And we were just bombarded with, I didn't know Jessica was writing a novel, and da, 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 da. You know, so it was like, oh boy, the cat's out of the bag now. I better sell this thing. You know, so it was a much different transition, you know, diving into that, because it was, I had no clue, you know, I didn't have like a novelist mentor to teach me the ropes. I was just sort of floundering. And so, you know, I figured it out. I read a lot of books, and I did a couple of the Writer's Digest online workshops. And those were awesome. They really, really were. And so that kind of helped me to, work up my courage, sharing it with the person who ran the workshop, as well as these random faceless strangers that were in the group with me that were also writing novels. You know, it made it a little less scary to share and say, okay, you know, let's see if anybody other than my mom and my husband think this is a wonderful book.
Yeah, it's always very tough but nice when you put your work in front of professional eyes and you get the feedback, even if it's tough feedback. You know, it's often feedback that you want, you need to move forward with your career. So that's great. Thanks for the mention again. And is when you were doing this, I know when people are novel writing, one of the things they often say is you're either a plotter or a pantser, where you either outline or you don't outline. As you were writing this and reading and doing all your research, you know, did you find yourself outlining the way the book was going to lay out, or did you just kind of research and then start throwing it all together and see what happened?
Yeah, a little bit of both. It's kind of interesting because definitely with that first book, I was more of an outliner and a plotter. And really it was because – you know, I already had the outline created for me by history because I was basing it on actual events. So just in the course of my research, I already sort of had a timeline and, you know, all the basic things that happened that were, you know, key to this court case. And so I already sort of had that skeleton. And then as I was writing, I was then filling in the blanks for the stuff that research didn't hand me, you know, the what actually happened to Margaret Morgan and her children. And I, you know, obviously I pulled that from other things that actually did happen in those days to other women who, you know, and other families that have been broken apart and that sort of thing. But so my first novel very much was more of an outline and a plotter. And then when I started my second novel, total pantser. you know, so it's kind of, you know, it's like I'm starting completely from scratch and going, I have no idea how I even wrote my first novel. What am I doing? Why did I think I could write another one? This is nuts. Because I was inspired by sort of a time period and events, but it wasn't as specific. It's another historical novel, but I didn't have a clear image of who my main character was going to be or what was going to happen to this person. It was more just a big concept. And I started writing thinking that I knew what I was writing about. And, you know, I've always sort of hated it when I've heard other authors say these kinds of things. But this one character just kind of kept putting himself in my story as I was writing different scenes. And I kept thinking, who is this guy? And finally, it occurred to me as I was basically halfway through the novel that he was an important main character, and I was going to have to rewrite because this guy wasn't going away, and I had not intended him to be a main character, and he was obviously much more dynamic than I thought he was going to be, and I ended up going back to the drawing board and rewriting it. And so now my book is basically kind of focuses around three main characters instead of the two, which of course changes the whole dynamic of everything now that you've got three people instead of two that you're caring about and that are connected in some way. So, and now as I'm starting my third novel, I'm just right back to the beginning again going, I don't know what I'm doing. So it's kind of a weird thing for me. I'm hoping I'll be able to fall back into the outline plotter phase because that was easier for me, but I think you just kind of have to go with whatever seems to be working for you at the time. Rather than try to stick to some rule that this is how I'm going to write my novels.
Yeah, and if you ever need excellent character names, I highly suggest Brian and Robert. I hear most best-selling books use those names. So if you're looking for
there
something.
You go. You're going to be the lead in my next book.
Great. That, Robert, you're going to be the villain then, I guess. So.
All right. Yeah, it's funny how, you know, you hear these different stories about you know, how a novelist will say, like, you know, the first book went this way and then the second one was completely different and the third one might be even a third different way, as well as you mentioned, the character putting themselves in scenes, which sounds kind of crazy if you haven't experienced it yourself as a writer. It's funny how once you get into the writing, like, these things actually do happen. So, mm-hmm. So that's cool that you're sharing that.
Well, you're really living the life of a writer from freelance to novelist and everything, and now querying for agents and pitching and still working on your new book. So that's great. Anyway, we are at the time of our interview that Robert and I like to call the 10 question blitz. And this is where I'm going to rattle off about 10 questions, some of them serious, some of them fun. Usually they're pretty fun to hear the responses of our interviewees. And after talking to you, I'm sure you're just going to give the best responses we've had to date. So, so are you ready, Jessica?
I think I'm ready.
All right, here we go with Jessica McCann for our 10 question blitz.
Number one.
Are you a morning writer, day writer, or night writer, and why?
I'd say probably a day writer. I'm not a morning person at all. It takes me a long time to start functioning and blinking in the morning. And nighttime is for my family. So I just have to hammer it out in the middle of the day as best I can.
Number two.
When writing your novel, All Different Kinds of Free, how did you get through the toughest days of writing?
The toughest days of writing. Sometimes you have to not write. Sometimes you just have to step away and take a break. There's that old adage of, you know, butt in the seat, and that's never really worked for me because then I just sit with my butt in the seat and stare at the screen all day long. So I get up, go. I take a walk, or I go run errands. I take a break from it and give my brain a chance to rest.
Sounds like my wife always says Target cures all ills when she's in a funk about anything. So
yes, I
number three.
Do you edit as you go, muscle through a first draft, then edit, or are you a superhero who writes a first draft that's so awesome it needs no editing?
Well, I'd like to say I'm the superhero, but I'm not. I kind of write in layers. It depends on the scene. Sometimes, you know, it'll just flow for me and it'll be very nice and beautiful. Most times I'm writing very lean, and then I go back multiple times and I keep layering in and adding more detail until I get a scene where I want it. So my drafts are always very, very short, the first draft, and then I build them up from there.
Number four.
In this presidential matchup, who do you vote for? Number one, Justin Timberlake. Number two, Jimmy Fallon. Or number three, Robert Lee Brewer?
I'm definitely going to go with Robert Lee Brewer on that one.
He's still trying to earn my vote, I think. I don't know. Justin Timberlake's a pretty good dancer. That's all. Yeah. And I like Jimmy Fallon's when he does the toy band with the celebrities. So anyway, but Robert's now leading 1-0.
All right.
So right. Robert for president.
Number five.
What's the strangest freelance assignment you ever accepted, and what did it teach you?
Oh, interesting. You know, I guess the strangest one was I wrote a video script for a local nonprofit association of bass fishers. And I, you know, maybe went fishing a couple times when I was like, you know, in grade school or something, never actually touched a fish, you know, just basically didn't even put the worm on the hook. So it was completely foreign to me. And it was interesting because it's always fun to talk to people and interview people who are passionate about what they do, even if what they do seems really bizarre to you. So I guess that taught me to just kind of respect other people's passions, no matter what they are or how out there they may seem. And these guys were really, really passionate about their fishing.
Robert, what's the strangest assignment you've ever had?
I don't know. The weirdest freelance thing I did was designing a site for it's like a remote drilling oil company. So it's kind of a similar thing. Like, you know, I have no clue what any of it was before I started working on it. So I had to, like, you know, research the heck out of everything and talk to a lot of people. And, but yeah, it was kind of cool though to learn something new that I previously had not known.
Yeah, it's something similar with water filters on faucets. It was fascinating. I didn't know anything about it, but now I filter a lot of my water because of it. Anyway. So you learn. You learn. Whatever you learn, it can be valuable.
Number six.
On the flip side, what was the best freelance assignment you ever accepted?
I guess I would have to say my first, because that was the one where I realized this was what I wanted to be doing. It was cool. Working for the hospital was an amazing experience. I got to do everything from interview the laundry department employee of the month to putting on scrubs and booties and observing a brain surgery. So I mean, it was that first one was the one that kind of, you know, launched it.
Number seven.
You've been given the opportunity to ask your favorite writer or author one question. Who is it, and what question do you ask?
Oh, boy, that's a tough one.
I throw at least one tough one in there.
Boy, yeah. Let's see. Does it have to be like somebody who's still alive? Or
no, absolutely not. This is a very lenient question, so you take it the direction you want.
Well, I love Charles Dickens. But I don't know what I'd ask him. I'd probably stand there yammering like an idiot, like I am now, going, I don't know what to say. I really like your stuff.
Did you enjoy writing this as much as I enjoy reading this? I always
there
figure,
you go. Thank you. Yeah, now I'll know what to do next time I get thrown that question.
I always figure that's what I'll say if I don't know what to say. But chances are I'll just stand there kind of in awe of the talent of whoever I'm standing next to. So,
yeah.
Number 8.
I've seen adorable pics of your dog on Twitter. If your pup could write a memoir, what would it be called?
Oh, my pup. Sammy. I would say, Dude, Where's My Toy? That would be the name of the memoir. She's got a new toy, and she is always carrying it around now. She's like an 11-year-old dog, and she has like this little puppy, and she walks around with this soft little squeaky toy in her mouth, and it's just hysterical, and she'll leave it places and then she'll look at us like, help me find it.
Sounds like my youngest daughter and our iPad. She somehow gets it, loses it, and we don't even let her watch it that often, so I don't know.
Number 9.
With all the freelance and novel writing, how do you balance your career and your family life?
That's tricky. I guess My family life comes first. My kids, my husband, the stuff that needs to get done. Work has always taken a back seat, and that's a nice thing about freelance, because as a freelancer, you can write in the middle of the night if you have to, and your client doesn't have to know that you wrote it at 3 a.m. All they know is that it got to them on time. So I think that if I had had a real job, I probably would have been fired multiple times over the years. But as a freelancer, you can take the day off because your kid's sick or got kicked out of school or whatever the case may be. And then you can write in the middle of the night after everybody's sleeping, and the next day nobody is none the wiser.
Yeah, Target doesn't want scanners at 3 a.m. Although that's a second Target reference. I think they're going to think they're a sponsor. which Target, if you want to sponsor us, we're all for it. Anyway, and finally.
Number 10.
What's the one piece of advice you give to anyone starting on their writing career?
Just write. Just do it. Don't think about it. Don't wonder if it's the right thing to do. If you want to be a writer, you have to write. Now, if you want to be a published writer, that's a whole nother thing. But if you just love writing, then you should do it. And the more you do it, then the path will become clear to you. If you're really enjoying it and you feel like it's good, then you can start taking things to the next step. But if all you do is think about writing a book, or you've got ideas, and that, then it's never going to happen.
Great answers. Great answers. Thank you so much, Jessica. This has been a really fun interview. Robert, you have anything else?
No, just, Jessica was so much fun. And for everyone who's listening, this was Jessica McCann. And please check out her novel, All Different Kinds of Free, from Bellbridge Books. And if you want to learn even more about Jessica, please go to her website, jessicamccann.com.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. It was fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Thank you.
All right. Well, that was a great talk with Jessica. And I'm just going to jump right into the takeaways. I'm sure that you've got plenty, Brian. But the first one that occurred to me was Jessica's take on, just if you want to get into freelance writing, if you want to write a novel, whatever you want, whatever project you want to work on, just do it. Just jump right into it. I have lots of writers that will contact me and ask, do I need to get a college degree? Do I need to get an MFA? Do I need to get a PhD in writing? And as Jessica has proven, you don't need a college degree to start freelancing. You can just start doing it. It's just a matter of being able to work with words, really. And, you don't need a full slate to start freelancing. If you've got one project that, and you take it on, you're freelancing. And you can just start building from there. And also, Jessica made a great point. It kind of flows into this, is that freelancing can be a feast or a famine business. So I often hear this in the legal profession, because my wife is a paralegal, is that, you know, either you've got nothing going on or you've got like a gazillion things going on. So try to plan ahead and space projects out to avoid, if you get hit with a bunch of assignments at once, that you can still take them on. Or sometimes maybe you get so successful that you have to pass the work on to others. Brian, what do you think?
Yeah, that was my big takeaway. I had a couple of them, but the number one was, don't be afraid to pass work on to others. I mean, if you're fortunate enough to be sitting in a position where you get lots of freelance work, you get a lot of opportunities headed your way. I know it can be difficult to pass things up. Sometimes you'll want to. You don't want to risk missing deadlines or doing not your best work in order just to get so many done at one time. And so because of that, if you're starting to get overwhelmed, you know, don't hesitate to pass it off to others. Don't hesitate to build up a network of other freelance writers who you can pass along. Because in return, if you're ever hitting one of those famine points, you may be on the receiving end from one of those folks when they are a bit overwhelmed, and hopefully you can build things together. The other takeaway I had, which I thought was at first I thought it was a little funny, and the more I thought about it, the more I thought, you know, this is a really, really good idea, is she said every year she sends out Thanksgiving cards. And not Christmas cards, because everybody sends Christmas cards, but she said Thanksgiving cards. And she used that as a way to say, I'm thankful for my connection with you, and I'm thankful for the work that you've passed along to me. And with that, she said it will keep you in their minds. And if they have anything urgent coming up, especially around the holidays, you know, people want to take off around the holidays, they want to get things out before Christmas, you know, it reminds them that you're available, you're happy to work with them again, and it keeps you fresh in their mind. And I thought that was really good advice. I'd never heard that before, and it was kind of unique, so I'm glad she said it.
Yeah, I thought that Thanksgiving card idea was, like, just perfect. You know, not only is it unique, like you said, Brian, but it's also very relevant, both as far as the timing and also as far as, you know, what better time to thank people than at Thanksgiving. And really, like, you know, I don't get a bunch of Thanksgiving cards. I don't know if I get any Thanksgiving cards. So that would really stick out from the competition as far as, like, other writers, what they're doing. The other, like, final point I had was about monetizing your writing. And there were two quotes that I had from Jessica during our conversation. The first thing was in relation to writing for the newsletter. And she was asked, you know, what can we do to get you to write this newsletter for us or put together? And she said, well, you could pay me. And like, that is exactly the type of mindset that a writer should have when it comes to their writing. The other thing was, when she was working on her novel in secret, and then all of a sudden her friends found out about it, and people found out that she was writing a novel. So then her first thought, and this is a direct quote, was, I better sell this thing. And really having that mindset is important for making it as a freelance writer or any kind of writer that wants to make money with your writing. You know, there's an art and a craft to writing. But don't forget to monetize your writing. It's very important to do that both for yourself and for other writers.
Yeah, it's very important. I think we forget how valuable content is, whether that's freelance content for a magazine or a company or ghostwriting or our own work in a novel. And while, you know, at times you can give some things away for free, it's important to know that for all of us and for all the content that's valuable, it's important to make money from it as well. Anyway, I want to thank Jessica for coming on the program and talking about how to build up a successful freelance career. And for those of you who work with me and Robert, we're both now expecting Thanksgiving cards. Just kidding, kind of. From Robert Lee Brewer and me, Brian A. Clems, thanks for listening to the Writer's Market Podcast. Come visit us at writersmarket.com and writersdigest.com. And don't forget to stop back next time for more great publishing advice. Until then, take care of yourself and your writing.